Welcome to episode 3 of the BBC. I've written BBC in my notes, but what I really mean is the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb's 97.2 FM. Today we're celebrating the young adult novel. Many people love watching films and TV shows rated U and PG, so why not read books originally written for younger audiences? Young adult literature doesn't need to be tame in any way, as we'll learn from Sarah Ann Jukes, whose book Outside is about a girl who is held captive for many years before escaping and having to assimilate into a world that she can hardly remember. My emerging author, Pippa Lewis, is working on a young adult series reminiscent of Philip Pullman's Dark Materials, which is pretty dark indeed. And we will be joined by the former children's laureate, Chris Riddell, who will be talking about writing, drawing and political cartoons. As always, you can contact us on social media. I'm on Twitter at Anna M. Burt, B-U-R-T-T. We're on Instagram at Brighton Book Club, and you can email us at brightonbookclub@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone who's got in contact after last month's show. We also have a podcast which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. We actually made number 12 in the Apple Books podcast this month, which was unexpected and quite impressive, if we say so ourselves. I'm going to play a song now, and then we'll be joined by Pippa Lewis. I'm in the studio with local emerging writer Pippa Lewis. Pippa is a member of the regular writing course I run at the West Hill Hall in Brighton, and I have had the pleasure of reading her first full novel and the beginning of her next one. Pippa, can you introduce yourself, please, and tell us about your books?
Yep, so I'm Pippa Lewis, and I live in Brighton. I moved here about 30 years ago from Suffolk, and I wrote as a child and then stopped for years and years and years and started again about 6 or 7 years ago and taking it really seriously, and finished my first novel, which is a children's fantasy adventure for a kind of 11 plus readership, earlier this year. It's called The Glass Butterfly, and as I say, it's fantasy adventure, and the main character is a 15-year-old boy called Arthur who lives with his uncle and his older sister on a kind of remote island, fishing island place, and when his uncle is murdered and his sister is kidnapped by smugglers, it's only Arthur who can set out and rescue her. So he stows away on board the smuggler's ship and enters a world which is very similar, actually, to our world, a kind of 19th century, turn of the century type world, except for the magical twist of a race of shape-shifting Therians, that's what they're called, Therians, who have a human form and an animal form. And his journey takes him into the world of the Therians, and he discovers that he's been lied to by his uncle, and he ends up having to find his own true identity and work out who that is in order to rescue his sister. And that's really what it's about, this idea of self-awareness and understanding who you really are. And he has to go through a process of understanding that and accepting it and embracing it. And when he does and celebrates that, that empowers him to rescue his sister.
Well, that's a pitch if I've ever heard one.
Okay, well, that's good.
What books inspired The Glass Butterfly, Pippa?
Loads, I would say. I mean, there's a kind of Lord of the Rings feel, that kind of mm-hmm. epic adventure thing. I really love that sort of thing. Call of the Wild is a big...
Who wrote Call of the Wild?
So Jack London okay. wrote that. Things like this, Dark Materials, mm-hmm. almost anything by Frances Hardinge. And then things like Daphne du Maurier's Jamaica Inn and Treasure Island by Robert Louis Stevenson. And even things like The Odyssey, which my dad read to me when I was a kid and loved. So that kind of epic journey
quest
thing.
Novel,
quest,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Do you think there's something about young adult fiction that is a lot less pretentious than fiction for adults? Do you think there's a kind of freedom in it?
I suppose so. You can... From the fantasy side, you can certainly go where you want with it. And I think you can... what I'm trying to do anyway with this one is look at truth and how truth can be accepted or rejected and how you can... So I think there's more truth maybe in young adult. It's Yeah, you're rawer at that age, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Get in early.
Yeah.
So far, you are unpublished. This novel is yet to be signed. I'd like to say, if any commissioning editors are listening, which obviously you should be, and obviously you're going to sign Pippa, I would like 20%, and this is legally binding. How have you found submitting to agents, prizes, publishers, and how do you stay upbeat after a rejection? Because it's really, it's a hard world out there.
It's writing a novel and getting a novel published seem to be two completely different undertakings, one of which you have absolute control over, and the other you seem to have absolutely, well, not quite absolutely no control, but very little control. So it's slow, and it's just, you have to just keep plugging away at it. I was really, really thrilled earlier this year. It was the book was shortlisted within the Joan Aitken Future Classics Prize, which meant I got to meet Julia Churchill, who's an actual agent and works for A.M. Heath. And she was really, really lovely and really encouraging and was just, OK, just start sending it out to agents. So that was really good. But yeah, no, I think you just have to keep plugging away. I'm writing, it's the first of a trilogy, so I'm writing books 2 and 3, so that's keeping me busy anyway.
And have you plotted them all out?
Sort of. In my head, I know where they're going, and I'm writing them at the same time, so I'm writing chunks all over the place. At some point, I'm going to have to do some proper plotting and put it together, but at the moment, I'm writing the bits that are coming to me.
If you had to name one book as your favourite book as a child, and the best book that you've read recently for children or young adults, what would they both be?
Just picking one is really, really hard.
You have to, so it's Desert Island.
Right, okay. So I would have to go with, from my childhood, I'd have to go with My Friend Flicker, which was Mary O'Hara. I read it again and again and again, and I actually still read it quite often, and it's a beautifully written book, and her descriptions and her observations of animals is amazing. I'd have to go with that.
And the best book you've read recently?
So that's quite easy, in that I've just finished reading Frances Hargind's latest, which is called Deep Light, which is an amazing, bonkers adventure, but also a brilliantly rendered depiction of a toxic friendship. And it's really subtly done and real light touch. It's a definite, you should read it. Everyone should read it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're always looking for recommendations here. I know you have been and are part of various writing groups in Brighton, because I know that's how you met Sarah and that's how you met me. How valuable is it for you to be part of a writing group or groups? And do you think you'd have finished your book if you weren't part of any?
I think it's been, it's on one level, it's really important in that you share work with the people you're on in the groups with, so you get the critiquing and the sharing. But I think for me, as an unpublished writer, what it enables is that kind of conversation about the story, and the dialogue about the story. And when you share your story with others and they come back with ideas, it becomes a two-way thing. The story becomes a shared tale, a shared being, if you like, and it
it's less isolating,
and that's where it can then really take off. And I think it's that, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's telling stories, and so you want to share them. And as an unpublished writer, you need to find people you can share your stories with.
Absolutely. Pippa, what's your best piece of advice for anyone writing at the moment?
just keep going. Just write.
Be persistent.
Just keep going. And if it's about, if you mean in terms of trying to get an agent, then be persistent, I guess. But in terms of writing, just write. Put words on a page, because once you've got words on a page, you can do something with them. Even if they make no sense, when you come back, they probably will do.
Thank you very much for coming on, Pippa.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Can we find you and track your progress? Twitter, best way?
Twitter.
What's your handle?
Pippa J. Lewis. PippaJayLewis.
Thank you very much for coming on the show. We'll be back after this song with author of Outside, Sarah Ann Jukes. This is the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb's 97.2 FM. I'm in the studio with local author Sarah Ann Jukes, who has written an incredible novel published this year by Penguin called Outside. I'm going to read the blurb for you and a couple of the reviews before asking Sarah many questions about this book that I have, which I devoured in a day, and I haven't done that in years. I will say before I go on that the book tackles some issues that some listeners might find distressing. Here's from the blurb. Elle has never been outside, but she knows it exists. She just has to prove it. Her whole world is inside, trapped with her books and the others and him. She has never seen a tree or felt the rain, but that's about to change. Elle's getting out for good. In the spirit of Emma O'Donoghue's, I always say Emma O'Donoghue, sorry, Emma Donoghue's Room, Outside is a poignant story of strength, friendship and unconditional love, even in the most challenging of circumstances. Viva magazine said that this is no fantasy book, but a clever exploration of how we tell ourselves certain narratives in order to make sense of our world. It is a book about speaking your truth without shame, coming to terms with your past and giving voice to those who have been silenced or mistreated. Sarah, what inspired Outside?
Hello, hi. So what inspired Outside? So it was a couple of things, really. I just finished, you just mentioned Emma Donoghue's Room. Mm-hmm. I'd finished that as one of my favourite books. So that was definitely an inspiration. And also I think it was just Elle herself came to me. I was on a train journey from Brighton to Lewes. It was only 20 minutes and I was like, oh, I need to think of a new book idea. And it's like Elle was just demanding that I start chatting about and start writing about her, really. So she was just manically in my ear and just didn't leave me for about 4 years.
But she wasn't based on anyone that you knew necessarily. She just came to you in some kind of divine
moment. Isn't that nice when that happens?
Lovely. Could you read us some?
Yes, I can. Thank you. So I can read you the incredibly short first chapter. I really like starting books with very short chapters. They're kind of like almost like mission statements.
Excellent.
So this is Elle's mission statement. Here's the thing about being inside. Ain't no one believes that they are. Pretty stupid, as there are clues just about all over. Feed rattling down pipes from somewhere else. That dirty old smell on him when he barges in through the door. And the door. And him. But the others, they stick their fingers in their ear holes and tell me to quit with my lies. They're as happy as can be inside these four walls. They eat when it's time to eat, sleep when it's time to sleep, read when it's time to read. Far as they see, ain't no need to see no outside. Or maybe they're just scared. Not me, though. I'm going to get me my proof.
God, that's such a good opening. How did you get into Elle's head and mindset when you were writing the book? It must have taken a lot of research. And why did you feel the need to tell this story? Because it's quite heavy hitting.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing a lot of work with the NSPCC. Mm-hmm. So I'm a volunteer for them and I work for their schools service. So it says Speak Out and Stay Safe service, mm-hmm. which means I kind of go around schools and talking to kids about how they can protect themselves from abuse. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of swirling in my head anyway. And it's always been something I've felt really passionate about, that we should be speaking to children about how they can protect themselves from abuse, because, you know, it's child abuse, you know, it happens to children, it's an awful thing. So it was something that was already, as a topic, interested me. And when it came down to kind of speaking about Elle and why she was trapped in the room, it seemed really important that I kind of explore that in her, through her eyes.
Do you think that young adults have young adult books have a duty to speak important truths?
Yeah, completely. I mean, it's something that if it happens to a young adult, then it needs to be in the fiction that they're writing. It needs to be handled sensitively, and a lot of the stuff that's happening in Outside happens off the page. Mm-hmm. But it's in there because, although, you know, what happens to Elle is it's a very strange thing. There's not many people, thankfully, who are being trapped in rooms for most of their lives. A lot of the stuff that she's going through, such as things like PTSD, her, you know, kind of struggling with her mental health.
And the coping mechanisms that she creates, right? Because she creates a whole world for herself inside this very small space. Could you tell us a bit about that world that she creates?
Yeah, so Elle's world is kind of trapped within four walls, and it's quite a horrible world. So she creates this world. She calls the outside inside her head. Mm-hmm. And this is a world that's kind of cut out of all of the books that she's been reading, particularly fairy stories. So it's almost like a world made out of paper, but imaginary in her head. So it's got trees. It's kind of painted with the kind of illustrations that you might find in a fairy tale book, such as, you know, princes in the distance and maybe a gingerbread house and things just like, if you have a look at the description, there's birds in the sky, but they're not necessarily moving, because that's how she sees the outside world, is how she's seen the outside depicted in fairy stories. And that is her coping mechanism, as you say. It's kind of where she escapes to when she needs to escape her inside.
Yeah. How important was it for you to use books and reading as such a crucial device in the book? Because it's ultimately what saves her, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, reading for me has always been that escape. You know, it's the same, you know, if you need to escape a waiting room or a locked mm-hmm. room, it's exactly the same way you kind of need that. You need to escape into a different world every now and again. And for Elle, that's incredibly important because the world that she is in is awful. And so she uses books as a way to kind of explore the world outside the one that she's in and kind of learn about things and also just kind of remove herself from a situation that would otherwise hurt her mental health more.
Mm.
And I think that's incredibly important with books, that we can explore our mental health through books, and we can also remove ourselves from certain situations. And I just really wanted to kind of think about all of that within this book and explore that.
What's the reaction to the book been like? Have you been happy with it?
Yeah, it's been really good, actually. It got a lot of reviews. I think a lot of young adult books don't really get that many reviews, mm-hmm. But this one, for some reason, people really seem to want to talk about it, which mm-hmm. is great. It's exactly what I wanted with this book, is to kind of start conversations. And a lot of people have been having them. It was just nominated for the Carnegie, which is very exciting.
Congratulations, that's excellent.
Thank you. It's like my favourite prize. So
gosh, that must feel amazing.
Yeah, it's like a bit of a crazy dream. So there's been lots of cake since then.
Keep it coming.
A lot of cake, yeah.
When will you find out?
I think the long list is February.
Okay, the next, well, we'll keep next everything step. Crossed for you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great just to be nominated, to be honest. It's like cake.
So you and Pippa met through a writing group, mm. as far as I know, and I know you work with the Jericho Writers and also Creative Future based here in Brighton. Can you tell us a bit about both of these organisations and how you feel the importance of being part of a creative writing group is?
Yeah, it's incredibly important. I mean, I've been writing since I was 16, so mm. I've been a member of a lot of creative writing groups. Jericho Writers is a company based in Oxford, and I work for them as like my day job.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of involved in their content. And what they are, they're kind of a club for writers, but online. So they offer kind of editorial services for writers. But they also offer kind of masterclasses, video courses, stuff like that. So I do a lot of webinars with literary agents and trying to work with writers, just like Pippa, actually, who are kind of looking for the kind of where to take their manuscript.
So it's kind of a consultancy service.
It's a consultancy,
really?
And a club, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's fun to work with them. And Creative Future are a Brighton-based charity,
mm-hmm.
Who work with underrepresented writers. So I work with those guys. I work with them for a year, actually, kind of being their Creative Future Literary Awards project manager.
Oh, excellent.
And then after I left that job, I just had to stay on board as a board member. And you know, if you know you are in Brighton and you're an underrepresented writer, I really recommend checking their mm-hmm. literary awards out. It's a national competition. It's free to enter, and the prizes are just excellent. Wonderful, like ladders kind mm-hmm. of to get the feedback and the help that you need to improve your writing and kind of take it to that next level.
Mm. Absolutely. I saw you tweet the other day, because I'm a stalker, that just because you're not published, it doesn't mean you're not a writer.
Yeah.
Can you talk about this a bit? Because it really, really fascinates me.
Yeah. I mean, this is something, I was with Jericho, we were getting a lot of feedback with people saying, oh, it's all about publishing. And it's just not, like, you know, everyone kind of sees the rejections they're getting from agents and going, oh, this means I'm a bad writer.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that at all. It means that you might be writing the wrong book at the wrong time and getting mm-hmm. into the wrong people. But it doesn't mean that what you're writing isn't fantastic. I think as a writer, the thing that you should strive for the most is just writing something that you're entirely proud of, mm-hmm. which sounds really easy, but it's very, very not. Mm-hmm. It's just not easy at all.
And authentic, and the book that you want to write.
Yeah. And the best possible book that you can write mm-hmm. as well. I mean, anyone can write a book, but it mm-hmm. takes real dedication and passion and skill to write a book that you're proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really true and really important for any writers and aspiring novelists to remember that also publication is a couple of people's opinions and some companies' money. Do you know what I mean? And it's excellent and wonderful if you can get to it, but it doesn't make you any less valid.
Exactly. And it's the market as well. Yeah, especially absolutely. The YA market in the UK at the moment isn't doing very well.
No, it's difficult.
So a lot of great writers are being turned away. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that their book isn't brilliant. It's just that they just can't make money at the moment.
Why do you think that the young adult industry is struggling at the moment?
Oh God, there's so many possible reasons. I've been reading kind of what other people think. Mm-hmm.
What do
it
people
is.
Think?
Well, it's kind of to do with what's going on kind of with the US market and the UK market and kind of those two things, and also thinking about where books are placed in actual bookshops. Should they be in children's fiction or adult fiction?
See, yeah.
Things like that. It might be to do with the fact that we haven't had like a big Hunger Games type book come out for
kind
a little
of franchise.
While.
Yeah,
I mean, that's where it all kind of
kicked
off.
I think Pippa's is the next one.
Yeah, it's definitely the next book. I mean, I have read Pippa's book and I can attest to the fact that it is fantastic.
Oh, she has two fans here.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Pippa's work. I am. And actually, if there really are any agents or editors listening, then you really do need to get your hands on it, because it is a fantastic book.
We can split that 20%.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
No worries. What are you working on at the moment, Sarah?
So I'm working on a couple of things at the moment. I've got a YA, kind of another standalone YA, mm-hmm. That I'm kind of mulling over. It's kind of to do with, I'm going to be very vague about it, but it's to do with perception and Twitch, if you've ever seen Twitch, the streaming service.
No. Yes.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Snapchat. I'm really showing my
age.
It's
a bit like, it's mainly gamers will kind of put a camera and you can kind of show the stream they're gaming. But it's also people can wear cameras and kind of take around. It's basically, it's like live TV, but people, everyday people do.
Sounds quite Charlie Brooker.
Yeah, it's a little bit. Mm. So it's more about perception. So I'm really interested in how different people see the world. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I'm exploring in the new book.
Okay.
And I'm also writing middle grade as well.
Excellent. Middle grade, for anyone that doesn't know, is for kids aged between...
So it's kind of 8 to 12. Yeah. You can have lower middle grade, upper middle grade. Apparently I'm writing on the lower end of the middle grade. But yeah, it's just been so fun. I just wrote it in a week for fun. It's so nice to write for fun again after publishing, because sometimes it's like when you get a publishing deal, it's like, okay, now you have to write this, you know, something similar to what you wrote before. And it's nice just to write for fun.
Absolutely.
For a totally different readership. It's been great.
So, Sarah, you're going to stick around after I've spoken to former children's poet laureate, children's laureate, Chris Riddell. But we're going to talk about Dean Atta's Black Flamingo later on the show. But before I play another song, how can we find and follow you?
Yeah, so you can find me on my website, which is sarahandjukes.com. Mm-hmm. And also on Twitter, very simply, Sarah and Jukes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chris Riddell is with me in the studio on Radio Reverb's 97.2 FM. Chris, thank you so much for coming on. We're absolutely honoured to have you here. Chris, I'm going to ask you a weird question. When did you first realise you could draw?
Not such a weird question. I do remember one lovely afternoon, rainy afternoon. My dad was a vicar, so I lived in big old vicarages, and I was in a vicarage in North Yorkshire. The rain was coming down, very Haworth, and I remember having a wonderful afternoon with some Crayola crayons, scribbling all over my dad's study wall.
How old were you?
I was about three.
Okay.
My mum came back, got very. My dad came back and got very cross, and then my mum gave me a load of paper and said, "Use this instead of scribbling on the wall."
How different your life would have been had she just not given you that paper and told you off instead.
I could have been a painter decorator. Who knows?
Which is
interior designer.
Still quite nice, but very different. What was the first book that you worked on? How were you kind of discovered? How did you reach that next stage from just drawing for yourself and drawing for others?
Well, I went to art school. Mm-hmm. I ran away to art school. That was a very exciting sort of period of my life where I
literally.
Was... Yeah, I was due to go to university, study English. My art master said to me, "Why are you doing that? You should go to... You love art. Why don't you go to art school?" And I said, "Can I?" And he said, yeah, of course, go and apply. And so I applied just before term started, went to Epsom School of Art and Design, then on to Brighton, where I was taught by Raymond Briggs, the wonderful author of The Snowman. And then when I left, I thought, this is easy. I will take my work up to London. I'll show it to publishers. They'll say, you know, this is wonderful work. You know, how much can we pay you? And it didn't quite work out that way.
Funny that.
And then I finally went to a publisher, Anderson Press, and I talked to the... I didn't know it at the time, but he was the head of Anderson Press, a wonderful man called Klaus Pfluger. And I showed him my work, and he said in his deep German accent, he said, this is perfectly good, I can see you can draw. And I said, oh, thank you. And he said, and then he asked me this question that no one had asked me before. He said, you know, these are perfectly fine, but where are your stories? And I didn't write. I was, you know, I wanted to be an illustrator. I wanted to illustrate other people's words. But I'm afraid I got a bit panicked, and I said, well, I've got a story, but I left it at home. and he said, bring it in tomorrow. I want to read this story of yours. So I went home and wrote my first picture book in a blind panic because I knew this was an in to the publisher, but I had no stories. And I sat down and wrote a little story about a boy who was very concerned about a monster under his bed.
Which we can all relate to.
I think so, particularly John Lewis, who used it in an advert a couple of Christmases ago. So, yes, it's one of those.
Did they credit you for that?
No.
Funny that.
No, it is, but I sold a lot of books off the back of that. Mm. So it was the first book I ever did, Mr. Underbed, and I learnt the lesson. If I wanted to illustrate and produce my own art, I had
drawing
to go out
wasn't
and...
enough.
Well, I had to write. And so I only ever write. I'm an illustrator, but I only ever write in order to give myself things to illustrate.
That's very interesting, because I was actually going to ask you, if you could only ever draw or only ever write again, what one would you choose?
Draw.
Always.
And then get into this thing I do sometimes when I meet aspiring authors, possibly someone who's got an unpublished fantasy novel that is highly regarded. I can sidle up to them and maybe do a few sort of little drawings and things and suggest that their work would look much better with some illustrations with it.
That's very interesting, because I know a fantasy author with a really good manuscript whose novel could really...
I love the connections we're making here. This is good.
Chris, who are your main inspirations, both for drawing and for writing?
Very early inspiration of mine was John Tenniel, who illustrated Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. And I used to obsessively copy the illustrations from my copy of the book, particularly The White Rabbit. Completely obsessed by the technique that Tenniel had, where he sort of somehow imbued this character with amazing energy and sort of vibrancy, and I wanted to analyse that. So I'd sit and copy The White Rabbit in his waistcoat. And so I grew up with that, and then later on I discovered people like Heath Robinson and the wonderful illustrator of Winnie the Pooh, Ernest Shepherd.
Oh, I love those ones.
Oh, aren't they gorgeous? And these have all been influences on me. And then, of course, Raymond Briggs, who was my personal tutor at Brighton. I think what Raymond taught me, in a sense, was, you know, he lived the life I wanted to live.
Yeah.
He wrote his own material. He illustrated beautifully. He had a studio at the bottom of his garden. I thought, that's what I want. I want to be Raymond Briggs one day.
And you do have a studio at the bottom of your garden,
don't
you?
I'm getting there, yes, yes.
What did being the children's lawyer entail?
That's a hard question to answer, and I mean, it's one of those things that it's not specified.
Okay.
What they asked me to do is come up with a sort of 5-point plan, and I tried to be as broad as I could be in terms of describing the things I would want to do. So one of them was encouraging the use of sketchbooks, drawing every day. That became a big thing for me, drawing every day in lots of different contexts. The other thing I was very sort of keen on was to talk about libraries and the fact that libraries have been under huge strain, always one of the first things that local government cuts when local government has its money sort of taken away from it by central government. We're straying into political areas, but bear with me. And it's one of those extraordinary things in this country that we have prisons have got a statutory requirement to have libraries in them. which is a great thing, and I've visited quite a few prison libraries and seen the work they do. But our schools, there's no such statutory requirement in schools.
It's ridiculous.
So I think I was listening to Cresta Cowell, our current children's laureate, who's taken up the library campaign and is doing wonderful work. Yeah. And I think something like 1 in 8 schools has no library provision at all.
Wow.
And that's crazy. You know, and here we are talking about literature, talking about books, talking about the importance of writing and the imagination. So much of that begins, I think, for our readers
and
in libraries.
And we're not giving them a chance. You know,
absolutely.
No one's forcing them to read, but equally if you don't have the books there.
And then within a library you learn this special thing, which is reading for pleasure.
Yeah.
Where you look at a book and think, I like the look of that. I want to know what's inside. I want to get to that story. You open it up and you enter a new world. And I think we risk losing, I think, a wonderful heritage if we don't invest in things like libraries, invest in initiatives that teach our kids that reading is a pleasurable thing to do rather than something you have to answer grammatical sort of, you know, questionnaires on.
Absolutely. You've worked with a lot of really excellent authors, Paul Stewart being one of them, Neil Gaiman being another one of them. What's the process of collaboration, and have you ever drawn something that they just haven't liked or hasn't been how they've imagined something, or have you ever had a real kind of come to heads with someone about that?
No, I tend to sort of choose very sort of amenable authors. You know, I can usually talk Paul Stewart around when we've worked together for many years. Neil Gaiman only ever objected to a single drawing I did, and that's when I drew a vampire called Silas in the Graveyard book. And I gave Silas a sort of white hair, a sort of albino look, and Neil said, no, that he's got to have black hair, he's got to be the full Dracula sort of vampire. But actually, to be honest, I'm illustrating Alice's Adventures in Wonderland.
Oh, wow,
so I've come full circle.
That must be a dream for you.
It is wonderful. I mean, and yet daunting at the same time. Because
who are you doing that for?
For Macmillan, who are the original publishers of Lewis Carroll's book. And quite frankly, it's a lot easier working with dead authors. You know, they don't interfere quite as much.
You are a political cartoonist for The Observer, if I'm right. With the unpredictability of politics, how do you, I mean, I don't even know how the news is working at the moment because things are changing so fast. How can you draw quickly enough that things are still relevant?
It's a perennial sort of question. Mm-hmm. I mentioned John Tenniel. He was also a political cartoonist in the Victorian era. And I remember reading something that he wrote. He said he illustrated for Punch. He did a political cartoon each week when he wasn't doing Alice in Wonderland and other illustrations. He would do a political cartoon. He would come home on a Saturday night. The first edition would be delivered to him. He would sit by his fire, open up the magazine, look at his illustration, and he said he'd feel the weekly pang. And I know what that feels like, where you look at a piece of work you've done and you think, oh, it could have been better.
Or it's not relevant, or something's changed.
Oh, yes,
or, yeah.
I could have been so much more forceful in this. And so it's always a work in progress. Mm-hmm. What I tend to do is look at the week that's just been and think about the week ahead and then imagine what might be Sunday morning's topic, and then you sort of choose what might be relevant. And I'm helped, actually, by the issues of the day. I think a week doesn't go past without Brexit being mentioned.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's my subject matter for a lot of the time. And if ever that goes slightly stale, we have Donald Trump turning up in his nappy and flyaway hair, you know, creating a stink. And that's also very useful.
Do you find it hard to remember what you used to draw about for The Observer before Trump and before Boris and before
I don't,
before
because
Brexit?
No, because before then there were a whole other group. There was this man called John Major, rather grey, wore underpants. There was William Hague in short trousers. there was that wonderful sincere Tony Blair. Wasn't he lovely with his large ears and twinkly eyes and evangelical? He felt like a trendy vicar. Until, obviously, you know, he took us into war. So, you know, there are all sorts of issues always. For me, it's always been a place where I can sort of express my political views to stop myself actually shouting at the radio too much.
Have you broken pencils in anger before?
No, only in sort of frustration. I think I do sharpen my pencils to a very, very sharp tip. Mm-hmm. I do use social media quite a lot. I'm a great fan of podcasts. Mm-hmm. I love what you're doing here.
Thank you.
I tend to post up sort of drawing sketches I do. And on Instagram, that's my favourite sort of platform at the moment.
How can we follow you on Instagram, Chris? What's your handle?
Chris_Riddell. Mm-hmm. I like to tell people that. I was rather shocked to discover when I looked at my post that most of the artists I follow who are great usually do, I think, you know, maybe 200, 300 posts, you know, over the course of their time on Instagram. I've looked at mine, I've done 7,000.
7,000.
It's crazy. Wow. I'm out of control now. but the thing that gets most comment, I find, when I take photographs of my sharpened pencils.
Wow.
I get lots of good comments about my sharpened pencils.
It's very satisfying to look at.
It is.
Yeah. Chris, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really, really great to have you here. So I'm going to play another song, and then I will be joined again by Sarah Ann Jukes, where we will be talking about former Brighton resident Dean Atter's Black Flamingo. That was Flamingo Pier with Tell Me How, and I'm now delighted to be discussing the Black Flamingo with Sarah Ann Jukes. Do you see what I did there? It was a very, very smooth link. So before I forget to read it to you, I'm going to read the blurb. This is Michael's story. Join him as he enters the world with tiny feather eyelashes. Travel from school to college, where he discovers his flock and comes to terms with his identity as a mixed race gay teen. At university, take a seat in the audience and watch him find his wings as a drag artist, the Black Flamingo. A bold story about discovering that only you get the privilege of choosing who you are. There is power in embracing your uniqueness. What's your story? Sarah, what did you think of this book?
I completely love this book. It was such a pleasure to read. I read it all in one sitting. The typesetting was just magnificent.
Yeah, we were just saying that it gives... because it's written in verse, but you almost kind of forget that it's written in verse, there's all this space to kind of really absorb...
Breathe.
Yeah, breathe and see what's going on. And it's a hardback book, actually. I know the paperback's coming out soon, but it's very light.
And
the illustrations, the occasional illustrations are stunning.
They are. Yeah, no, they're really good. Really fantastic. And it was just such a pleasure to read. Mm-hmm. And it's really unusual to read a young adult book as well, which takes you all the way from birth.
Absolutely.
All the way to university.
Yeah.
That's such a it was so refreshing. Mm. The whole thing just felt like a breath of fresh air.
It did, actually. And I found it really empowering, even reading it as someone, you know, over 10 years older than the protagonist. To paraphrase that book of your review, that review of your book, Sarah, it's all about speaking your truth. So in terms of your race and your class and your sexuality, that you can be many things and you don't have to be limited to or by anything. And that's such an important message for young people that I just don't feel like that we're pushing enough. You don't, just because you're a woman, you don't have to be this. Just because you're gay, you don't have to be this. You know, you can be all these things and nothing, or whatever you want to be. And I've never read anything so kind of affirming.
Yeah, it's great. And you're completely right. And it's that kind of thing is so universal. Mm. I mean, that stuff even now I'm still trying to figure out.
Absolutely.
Who I am. You know, I don't think you ever really stop trying to figure that out. And it's just the space that Dean does on these pages are just so... Yeah, really, really great.
It's really amazing. I think every bookshop needs a copy of this book. Every library needs a copy of this book. I think every young person needs a copy of this book.
Yeah, definitely school libraries as well. I think it'd be really important to, if you're a school librarian listening, this is definitely one to pop on the list for anyone kind of struggling with any identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or anyone that thinks that a friend of theirs or a kid of their friend or a relative or a child that they have might be struggling with their identity in any way, you know, really trying to encourage them to read this book. You know, I know that I would have loved to read this book as a child and it would have been really valuable for me.
Yeah, definitely. And I really enjoyed reading it now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can never stop. You never really stop trying to learn who you are, do you? And I think this is just such a really lovely and gentle, it's not preachy, gentle reminder that it's okay just to kind of be you and to own your space and be authentic.
Yeah, completely. And it was really nice kind of, you know, you kind of finish the novel with a smile thinking like, oh, you know, someone here in the book might have found out who they are and kind of be comfortable with who they are, and it kind of makes you want to do that yourself, which is a wonderful way to finish a novel.
And it made me kind of fall in love with Brighton again. Not that I don't love Brighton, but you know, Brighton's a really key part and a key character in the book, and obviously Dean, you know, went to Brighton University. Mm. I think a lot of it is autobiographical. And it was just, it was really nice to be reminded of what an inclusive space Brighton is and how lucky we are to be here as well.
Dean's a fabulous writer when it comes to kind of writing about his own truth as well. Mm-hmm. And I really felt a lot of Dean coming through the pages there. He's an amazing poet, and mm-hmm. just reading his writing, I've listened to him perform quite a lot, and you get the same pleasure really just from reading it in a novel form as well. It was, really, really nice. Yeah,
I encourage anyone that's listening to look up Dean, look him up on social media, but also look him up on YouTube, because you can see a really excellent video recording of a poem called The Black Flamingo, which I think everybody should listen to. Yeah. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. I've loved today's show. Thank you very much, Pippa, Sarah and Chris. Before I go, a bit more shameless self-promotion. I'm running a one-day writing retreat from 12 till 5 on Sunday, the 12th of January. This will be the third I've run in the last few months, and the feedback has always been great, if I say so myself. You'll have uninterrupted reading time, tea, coffee, lunch, and a one-on-one session. Needless to say, you'll also meet a load of excellent writers. It's £35, and I have 2 free places left if you're a low-income writer. Just get in touch with me. I'll pop a link on the show notes, but you can find out more at west-hill-day-retreat.eventbrite.co.uk. On next month's show, we're going to be talking all things short stories with Naomi Ishigaro and local author Hannah Vincent. We'll also be discussing Elaine Chu's short story collection called The Heartsick Diaspora, published by local publisher Myriad Editions at the end of January. I'm leaving you with Fleetwood Mac. We have been the Brighton Book Club. See you next month.